copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Okay. We start out with a pretty bold statement. Why strategic plans fail? It's really not necessarily kind of an exciting title because we don't really want to fail, but yet 90% of all strategic plans do fail, and they fail for reasons that perhaps are somewhat expectant, only by virtue of the fact that we don't always succeed in what it is that we've been committed to ourselves to do. So why strategic plans fail and what you can do about it. That's what we really want to talk about today. So let's talk about the prevailing need. Organizations clearly understand that in order to grow, they must plan for the future. I mean, everybody wants to talk about strategic plans. I mean, one of the first questions that oftentimes comes to our company as we were growing our organization, they say, well, we want to be involved in strategic planning. And that's certainly an idea that is really very, very important. And yet, interestingly enough, the success rate of strategic plans is pretty dismal. The success rate of strategic plans is 90% of all strategic plans fail. Now, stop and think about that. I mean, if we continue to do this and they all fail, you know, why would we do it in the first place? I think that's probably a question that most of you might want to respond to. But the realities are that plans change. And the fact that they change and basically they're not being, the whole idea of planning, you know, 25 or 30 years ago was one thing. Today, it's a whole lot different only by virtue of the fact that change takes place so quickly that we basically can't keep up with it. And unfortunately, we make presentations, we talk to people about our strategic plan, and the realities are, in most instances, it's impossible for them to become reality only by virtue of the fact that changes take such changes in what it is that we do. A failed plan ultimately results in the loss of confidence of constituents it is committed to serve. This is kind of an interesting point. I was at a university in Michigan probably 5 or 6 years ago, and I was sitting down because the university wanted me to address strategic planning and help them to grow a strategic plan. So I came to the university and I sat down with the faculty over lunch, and there were probably 12 or 15 people on the faculty, and they all wanted to know a little bit about me and what it is that I was doing. And they said, what are you here for? And I says, well, I'm here to work with the ministry and the organization in creating a strategic plan. And they all started being quiet, first of all, and then they started smiling. And the first one said, well, you know, we had a strategic plan, and that was back in 2018. And that was really a plan that never really came to fruition. And we weren't really too excited about it. And then somebody else laughed a little bit later across the table and said, oh, yeah, I remember the 2015 strategic plan. That was really a good one. And then they go back to the 2014 one and the third. Then they go back to the 2012 one, and they're all laughing because they're saying, you know, we've never had a strategic plan that we basically could be really proud of and basically see it actually come to fruition. And so the failure of planning is one thing, but the loss of confidence that was created because the administration didn't have the confidence of the fact that somebody could build a strategic plan that basically would be functional and really impact the organization in the ways that it really needs to be impacted. So kind of keep that in the back of your experience. And, you know, perhaps what you might want to do is think back of the experiences that you've had as an organization. How many strategic plans have you had? How many of them were successful? What did you do that made it unsuccessful or whatever the case might be? So let's talk about why plans fail. And that's the next slide that we have in front of us here. Too often, created in plans are created in a vacuum. They're creating unrealistic goals given available resources. In other words, people come in and say, hey, this would be nice, this would be nice, this would be nice, and so forth. And they're kind of created in a vacuum in many instances because they don't necessarily understand what it is and what it is they want to do and what it is if they want to do is really realistic given the availabilities and the resources that are available to them. So they become created in a vacuum. And that basically results oftentimes in failure. Another reason is that they include the wrong people. You know, those who are the first to volunteer are often those who have a hidden agenda. You know, the last thing you want to hear, I think, as you're thinking about strategic planning, is that you want to ask people to volunteer to be part of the strategic planning group. And so the worst thing that you could do is would be to raise your hand up quick, jump up and say, you know, I'm willing to do this. And when you hear that, you almost realize that this is probably going to be a disaster because the person that stood up is probably often has a hidden agenda and we've just provided them the opportunity to be able to do what it is that he wants to do, but was probably not in the best interest of what it is that needs to happen. So including the wrong people, and many of you have probably experienced that. The worst thing that we oftentimes can do is to ask people for volunteers. You might want to extend the invitation to them to consider the opportunity, but to tell them and just provide anyone carte blanche to be able to participate is not necessarily in the best of interest. The lack of specificity is a third reason why plans fail. Big ideas need to be narrowed down to measurable, quantifiable objectives. It's not bad to have objectives, obviously, because we obviously need to do things. But the realities are we need to measure it down in quantifiable terms that are measurable. In other words, we're going to build, you know, a multi-million dollar facility, and we're going to do all this, that, and the other thing. And it may be that it would happen, but in many instances, it may not happen because of any number of reasons. Not necessarily what we anticipated, but the exact opposite is different, obviously. They have not considered the cost and what it's going to cost for things to be done. So if it's not done, the realities are we lose the commitment and perhaps the issues that basically were talked about in the meeting that I had when I first came to the university that was I was talking to. The lack of accountability. There's often not a clearly defined time agenda in which participants are accountable. In other words, we talk about the strategic plan, we tell people about the strategic plan, and then we don't hold them accountable in any meaningful way to realize that this is what it is that needs to be done, and this is what it is we're doing, and this is how it's going to happen. Basically, they're not holding themselves accountable, and consequently, the result is that the plan fails, and you have the situation that we talked about just at the beginning of the session. And then finally, the failure to engage the input of others. In areas of planning that go beyond the expertise of the planning team. In other words, they're not engaging necessarily always what it is the people that they need in order to be able to have a successful strategic plan. The majority of plans, as I pointed out, fail. And that's unfortunate because we lose the confidence of the people that we really want to engage. And but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't plan, because planning, you know, is important and we all recognize and realize that. But in the world today, doing 5-year plans or 10-year plans is unrealistic altogether because everything in technology is changing. And so what it is that you anticipate to do doesn't always come to fruition. Not many people ever found out or discovered that the fact that maybe the strategic plan that was done in 2019 was going to be successful during the pandemic, which we've been a part. And some of those things we can't control, but in some other instances we can, and we should probably consider that. One of the The next slide that I want to share with you, well, first of all, I want to talk about the big picture of development. And then we're going to be talking a little bit about the attitude continuum. But the big picture of development is this. There are four things. You know, the mission, and I've always thought that this is probably one of the best diagrams that I could provide that would help people to understand the breadth of development and all that it includes. So it begins with, obviously, the mission. Every organization has a mission statement. This is what it is that we do. Habitat for Humanity has been one of my clients for many, many years. And they have a mission statement that goes something like this, that we work in partnership with God and people everywhere from every walk of life to build and renovate homes, to grow people and to become what it is that God wants them to be. Four commas separating the whole message of the mission of Habitat for Humanity. And I don't know if you've had a mission statement and what your mission statement is. I would like to challenge you to share it with us if we take a break here in a little bit and say, what is the mission statement of your organization? I mean, could you articulate it so that people really understood what it is that you want to do? But mission is very, very important, and we all know that, and we recognize that. But at the top of the pyramid, we have the word vision. And if I were drawing a pyramid, at the top of the pyramid, I put the word vision, and then I put an equal sign that says vision equals mission accomplished. In other words, we have a mission. This is what it is we want to do. This is what it is that needs to be done. And we understand that, and everything that we do drives this vision. And the accomplishment of the vision is basically reporting back to people what it is that God, or what it is that they wanted to see accomplished through the vision. Vision is really important. One of the statements that I've often made with people when I'm talking with them about development, one of the first questions I'll say is, when you're talking with people about organizations and ministry, lead with your vision and not with your need. See, everybody's got needs, but not everybody has a vision. And I think one of the challenges that I would give to each one of you that are participating in this session today is that, you know, what is your vision for the future? What is your vision for your organization? I oftentimes tell people, I want you to not sleep tonight. And they all kind of look up and say, you know, what do you mean you don't want us to sleep tonight? I says, I want you not to sleep tonight because I want you to have a vision that's so big that basically God's going to have to involve and be involved in it. You know, what is your vision for your organization? What do you want to look like 10 years from now? What do you want to look like 5 years from now? Vision, people are driven by vision, not with need. Everybody has needs, but not everybody has a vision. What's your vision? Now, on the left side of the pyramid, we have what I call the strategic plan. We have to have a plan to get there. And so the strategic plan basically represents a series of steps. Now, it might be five steps. Let's say that we were doing this and we said, okay, this is going to be one of the first steps over here. We're going to do this first step and this step and this step. And we know what it is that we're going to do that basically is going to take us to here. Bill Bright, who was the founder of Campus Crusade and Crew, basically said in 1978 or 1998, I guess, that basically in 22 years, he wanted to make sure that everybody on planet Earth had the opportunity of seeing the Jesus film in their own language. Now just stop and breathe a little bit for that. I mean, stop and think about that. 22 years, a plan to bring someone from where it was they were to up here to an accomplished vision. And there were 22 steps to get there. And the first step basically was how we are going to take some of the most populous people in the world and translate the Bible, the Jesus Film Project in the language of the people. And the first languages were Hindi in India, China, and Spanish, and some of the other major steps. And so in the case of Habitat, or with the Jesus Film Project, It was a series of steps that brought people over a period of 22 years to complete the vision of what it is that they had prepared for. It's one of the great things done, you know, basically in the world today in sharing the gospel of Christ. So this was, I mean, it was going, it was great. There were 22 steps, but this would be not work if it wasn't for what's over here on the right side, because the right side determines what it is that, how it's going to get done. So we call that the development plan, and the development plan is just the same here. In other words, it's going to have a series of steps that basically mirror the series of steps that basically are included on the strategic plan. And the development plan represents the things that we do to grow an organization. And what we do to grow an organization is essentially what you need is you need people, you need money, you need time, and you need the involvement of God. And those are the four resources that we have available to us to accomplish this strategic plan. And so basically, this is going to collapse if you don't have a development plan that basically accommodates the needs for the various steps that will be required in order for us to achieve the vision. And I think this has been a great picture, a visual picture that many people have seen that they feel is going to be of value. So keep that in the back of your mind as we move forward. The next picture that I want to share with you is the attitude. All right, mission, four characteristics of highly successful organization. Highly successful organization have a mission statement, okay? And we've just already talked about that. A mission statement will typically include a series of clauses that clarify their mission and how they intend to fulfill it. The next step is obviously the vision that we've already talked about. These same organizations have a clear vision of what this vision statement would look like if it was successfully accomplished. I mean, do you know what your vision looks like or what it will look like if it, in fact, it's successful? The third one is strategic planning. The successful strategic plan spells out in quantifiable terms over a relatively short amount of time the steps that are going to take to achieve the plan, their plan. And then finally, the development plan, which is what we've already just talked about. The organizational development plan outlines in quantifiable terms the resources that will be required to achieve these annual goals. So that's just a report of what it is that we just talked about. This is the attitude continuum. I love this. Actually, this is one of the visuals that I think everybody can relate to, because everybody in the room today, in this particular room, everyone can relate to this, because everyone is somewhere on the attitude continuum, somewhere between euphoria. That's the extreme, right? I'm euphoric. I mean, I love the way everything's happening in the world. I love the organization of which I'm a part of. I'm so excited about it. I just can't wait to even go to the organization and be involved in everything that they're doing. I mean, you have some people that really like that. They're really euphoric. I mean, they're just overboard in terms of their appreciation and acceptance of what it is that is happening in their world. But then there's another group of people on the other side, at the extreme and the other extreme, and that's cynicism. A cynic is basically somebody in the back row who basically, whenever asked a question, basically reminds people that they don't know what they're talking about. I mean, they're cynical about everything. Nothing is really good. And so they're basically not necessarily people that you really find yourself wanting to spend an awful lot of time with. But everybody is on this attitude continuum, somewhere between one extreme to the other, between euphoria and cynicism. Now stop and think about this in the neutral area, right in the beginning. Let's assume that you're going to go to a new church and you want to check out the church that you think would be probably a place where you might be able to serve God and be involved with people. And so they're just kind of in the middle, aren't they? They're just kind of looking both ways. I mean, is this where we want to be, or is this where we want to be? They're just kind of looking at and determining what it is that is probably the best place for them. So let's say that they say, yeah, this is really a great church and they're really pretty nice. And so they may get a little bit encouraged because they see what it is that is happening. And they think, maybe I can be a part of this. But there are other people that get kind of discouraged in the process because what it is that they expected to happen never happened. And so when it didn't happen, they get discouraged. Now that is probably the easiest problem to deal with, because what they didn't do when they went to discouragement is they weren't given expectations. In other words, let's say the pastor meets you and they shake hands and they say, listen, it's great to have you with us. We really would like to have you involved in what it is that we're doing. And here are the things that we're involved in. And what we'd like to do is we'd like to take maybe the first 3 or 4 weeks to get to know one another, to get to show you all the things that are happening. I mean, if they told them that, you know, the realities are, they probably say they would be encouraged, wouldn't they? But if in fact they don't tell them anything, they get discouraged. And so they're a little bit upset about it. And then, you know, some of them will continue to go and they get, you know, nothing seems to happen. They start things, you know, continue to grow downward and then they get frustrated. And I think we all know what frustration looks like. I mean, sometimes, you know, frustration looks like it's you're all tightened up and so forth. And you just get really frustrated and you say, you know, if they only knew this, then the realities are they wouldn't be, nobody would be upset, but they don't tend to want to do anything. And so I'm really just frustrated. And then they kind of go back to apathy next, because an apathy says, well, you know, the person that is apathetic basically tells the person, you know, that's they're talking to with, hey, listen, you just got to live with it because this is the way it is. That's apathy. We just, you know, don't worry about it. Nothing's really going to happen. Just go on and live with it. And then cynicism. Well, usually people don't last that long. And that's unfortunate. But then there's the other side of the attitude continuum, encouragement. You get experience and you get the feeling that people really do care, and you're encouraged because of their encouragement. And then they get hopeful. Now, a lot of people are real afraid to get hopeful. Only because I'm afraid to get hopeful, because I was hopeful once before and I had a very bad decision, or I had a very bad experience. And so they're very careful to be take the next step of enthusiasm and euphoria. Everybody in your organization, everybody that you know in a variety of relationships is somewhere on the attitude continuum. And so the question that you need to ask is, where are you on the attitude continuum? Where are you in regard to the attitude continuum as it relates to the organization of which you're a part? Are you part of the encouragement side, the euphoric side, or are you basically looking back and saying, you know, nothing ever happens around here, but we'll just deal with it because that's just the way it is. You know, the realities are there's changes that can be made. And let me just tell you, that happens in every part of life. And it's not just, you know, talking about strategic planning. It's talking about, you know, what happens and how organizations grow and how they don't grow. And that's, I think, very, very important. So moving right along here, and we've got an awful lot of road to climb, but let's continue to do that. And, I have to look my pagers up here. Planning initiatives. Okay, we're going to talk about planning initiatives and what do you need to, because this is a strategic planning exercise. How do you really, you know, plan initiatives? And first of all, the organizational mission. Your mission is the foundation of all, you know, planning, and strategic planning begins right there. And we've already talked about that, so we don't need to necessarily spend an awful lot of time. But in the next step, strategic initiatives, your planning must focus on identifying key initiatives. Every strategic plan is different. Preliminary planning typically identifies 5 to 7 key initiatives. You probably can't do everything that you want to do in one strategic planning exercise. You need to determine what it is that needs to be done and how you're going to get it done and what it is that it's going to be required, what will result as a result of the success. So just in a couple of general areas, of where some examples of things that you would do in a strategic plan. You know, one might be, you know, developing your facilities. That's usually a part of most of strategic plans. You know, something has to be done that's basically not being done right now. And that usually becomes one of the high points of every strategic plan of which we've been a part. The facilities that we need in order to be able to expand and continue to grow the organization. And then, you know, curriculum is pretty important, isn't it? especially if you're a school or even, you know, an individual who basically has a, an intent to be able to grow an organization in a very strategic way. You need, in the case of, in that case, to basically engage others. Co-curricular activities. This is a typical project that we would work with an organization with whom we work with on a fairly regular basis. But co-curricular activities, the things that basically make up what it is that we need to do. Then personnel, we need to get the right people in the right place so that we can continue to do what it is that we feel God's called us to do. And then in this last one, it was athletics, and it could be anything. You know, what are the key initiatives that you really want to accomplish in the strategic plan? And how do you begin the process of identifying what those needs are and the steps that you're going to take to make sure that they are accomplished? I realize that, you know, that's kind of a major quick stop, but I want to, because of the interest of time, I want to go back to, if you would, Steve, or Greg, to slide number 10, because I'm using more time than what I have available to me, and that's a little bit frustrating. But the strategic planning model, I want to talk about eight steps of the strategic planning model. And you have a copy of this available to you, so we're going to make sure that you have that. But I want to talk about strategic planning, the eight steps of planning. And I think these eight steps of planning are going to be you know, helpful in enabling you to really succeed in the whole area of strategic planning. There are eight steps in strategic planning. So you break up the steps that you want to do. For example, the mission statement, the things that we just talked about a little bit later. But the profile of the idea, let's assume that we're going to do something. And let's say that we're going, and this would be practical, let's say in your home, it's going to be obviously very, very practical in your organization. But the profile of the ideal, let's say that we're going to have a banquet or something, you know, just as an example. Starting the strategic planning process, you know, is imagining perfection and what it looks like. In other words, if we're going to have a, let's say, a banquet as a simple exercise, you know, what is that, you know, if we have the greatest banquet that we've ever had, and, you know, the realities are, you know, that's going to be what we really want to do. So we pick the profile of the ideal in whatever we're doing. What is the ideal result of what it is that we are really committed to doing? The second step is what I call the assessment step. And that's based on a scale of from A to D. How would you assess where you are now? In other words, if you ever had a banquet in the past, you know, how did it relate to what happened, you know, in the event, if you'd done one in the past? And based on a scale from, let's say, A to D, what would you assess where you are now? In other words, was your banquet, was it a banquet? It was, everything was perfect. Was it a B banquet? It was kind of okay. If it was a C banquet, maybe, perhaps, but probably not. D, it was a total failure. I mean, the realities are we have to assess reality in order to be able to address success. The next step in the planning process is quantifying. From the list that we just provided, you know, A through D, create a list of deficiencies that come to mind. Now stop and think about that. You know, you've had a banquet, you've had an event, you know, whatever it is that you really are wanting to plan, you have to evaluate what it is that's happened in the past, and then you need to quantify the deficiencies that made what it is that didn't take place happen. So the quantify from the list above creates a list of deficiencies that come in the situation. So now you have a list of deficiencies, and then we have to prioritize those deficiencies. In other words, where do we start? You know, and so you look at the deficiencies, and then you prioritize them on the basis of their relative importance to your success for what it is that you want to do. And so now you you haven't done any planning other than just what it is that we've done right now. We profiled the ideal. This is what it is that we want to do. We assessed, we've done it in the past, and we've never really done the perfect job that we wanted. We maybe did a B or a B plus, but the realities are there's still need for having more success. We quantify from the list. These are the steps. And so we took all the 7 or 8, 12 steps, whatever the case might be, to determine what it is that the deficiencies that need to be addressed. And then we begin to prioritize them. And that's where basically all the preparation takes place for strategic planning. So the next step is planning. You want to begin creating plans to address needs in a strategic way. And so you bring all of the resources together in a variety of different ways, and it's done incredibly successful in many instances. In other places, it takes a little bit longer just by virtue of the size of the project. But planning is very, very important, obviously. And then we organize. That's the next step. Once we get it planned, we say, okay, here are the priorities that we want to do in our strategic plan. These are the steps that we want to take and in the order that we want them to take. And then we begin to create plans to address those needs. And addressing those needs is basically saying, okay, here are the needs. We need to prioritize them. And then we need to make it possible for that organization to succeed or that particular activity to be accomplished. Then the next step would be implementation. Engage teams to address specific needs. You need to get implementation going on as it relates to planning. And engaging teams to address specific needs is a very, very important part of it. And then finally, evaluate. It's kind of a circle, isn't it? It starts from beginning, and then it kind of goes around in the circle. We profile the ideal, we assess, we quantify, we prioritize, we plan, we organize, we implement, and evaluate. We just continue to go over and over and over again. That strategic plan model is probably one of the most successful models that we've ever used in our practice, because it gives you a direction on planning, whether you're going to plan an event, whether you're going to plan a strategic plan, whether you're going to do this, that, or the other thing. The realities are the steps are specifically essential to do those particular steps as they're written out. I think probably one of the biggest mistakes that we make is seeing life in the rearview mirror. How many times have you been, any of you have been involved in a meeting that you thought was really great, and you're driving home with your spouse and you're saying, oh man, that was really a great thing. And then your spouse says, well, you know, if they did that, it would have been much better. I mean, because they forgot to do that and they forgot to do this. And the better, you know, we prepare for success is going to be realized through using, I think, the strategic planning model. The practicality factor, as it shows up in the next section, always be planning. The idea of planning is not limited to major organizational planning events. It's not just limited to doing the strategic plan. This is something that we do every day in relationship to everything that we do. And we always need to be planning and plan for everything. It takes a few minutes to create a preliminary plan for anything. I mean, if you look at the 8 steps that we took in the previous page, it takes a very few minutes to create a preliminary plan and plan for everything. And then here are some sample ideas of things that you can do, because planning encourages not just what it is you do on the institutional level, but in everything that you do. So here are some sample ideas of plans that should be considered. You know, planning events. We need to plan events for things that are going to take place within your organization. Plan special programs and activities. That's really important. And they need to be planned, and they need to be planned strategically. Plan meetings, plan a presentation, plan a sermon. Many of you, you know, speak to churches, and, you know, planning the meeting. What is it that you want to say? What is it that you really want people to consider and evaluate and assess and so forth? You know, we need to be included in things like that. Plan family get-togethers and small group meetings. We do that a lot, you know, within our organizations, where we bring people together and we start thinking about things in group meetings and how we can continue to grow. And then plan your week. You know, strategic plan. What's your week this year? What do you plan to do this week and next week and the month before, the months later? That's all, you know, very, very important. So then finally, the last one is take time regularly to imagine great thoughts and opportunities. I'm a dreamer, and I've always been a dreamer. I always see the world differently than anybody else, or it seems to be that way sometimes, as I'm living in another world. My wife sometimes looks at me and she says, "You know, honey, you live in your own world." And I said, "Yeah, I do." She says, "Maybe you ought to come in sometime and see what it's like." And I think probably you can relate to that. But I've always lived in this world that's outside of my own world, in hopes that I can be accomplished and be used of the Lord to make something that's going to make a difference. The box, many people live in a box without clearly understanding what's outside of that box. We've already heard about that, or we've already talked about that, I suspect, in many instances of our lives. Listen respectfully to what others have to say and occasionally suggest options. Many people, you know, live in a box without clear understanding. Somebody asked me one day, he says, "Where are you living in the box?" And I says, "What box? Is there a box out there? I mean, where are you as that you were thinking about your future and what it is that you really want to see accomplished?" Ask questions. Suggest ideas regardless of how absurd they might appear. I've always made some really crazy assumptions, and you know, a lot of them didn't function, but at least I got it out so that I could at least talk about it and think about it and get to the impact of others. And then listen. Quietly and considerately take the time to listen to others. And I think that's very important, and one of the things that we don't oftentimes do. And some of you that have been in sessions earlier today or earlier this week where I've been talking about strategic planning issues, is mind mapping. I don't know if you're familiar with mind mapping at all. I had an experience actually at the forum, the first forum of this of ELF, which was back 22 years ago. I was there and I was speaking on issues relating to development or whatever. And I had a 3x5 card, and it had my notes. It had like four notes of things that I really wanted to talk about. And so I was, periodically looking at my notes to make sure that I was going to do the next thing and what it is that I was going to say. And so the mind map, or the that was the what I was doing. Well, the gentleman, after the meeting was over, came up to me and he said, "Do you know anything about mind mapping?" I says, "No, I don't know anything about mind mapping. What's mind mapping?" Well, mind mapping, you know, provides a means of being able to basically communicate and plan for the future. There's an organization, I'm going to just give you some information. There's an organization, if you're not familiar with mind mapping, then look it up, because xmind.net, I think, is an incredible, incredible tool that is absolutely, totally free. So you don't have to be concerned about, you're not going to have to pay for anything. But it basically provides a resource where you can map your plans for the future. And so it becomes a very important part of the strategic planning process is mind mapping. How do we take what it is that we want to do and basically accomplish it successfully? And so mind mapping gives you that particular possibility. There are several, we'll just go through this real quick and then I'll show you a couple, just one picture that I think you might find to be interesting. Resources, there are several mind managing resource, managing software tools available. And then the next one says, suggest my preference, and this is Jerry's preference, and it sounds like I'm selling something, and I'm not selling a thing, but my preference is XMind. It is free, and it's available online at www.xmind.net. It's fabulous. I mean, honestly, I use it almost every day, or in one form or another. I'm constantly amazing these little mind maps so that I know that I have to go here, 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 and someplace else, whatever the case might be. But XMind is great. Now, there's one factor that I will be faithful in sharing, and that is that it's free if you want to share it with a buddy. In other words, you've done this great mind map and you want to say, "Oh, listen, I really want my buddy to see this," or "I want another one of my clients or people that I'm working with to see it." You can get that. I think it costs like $10 a year. It's not very much. It's not like a huge expense, but it allows you the opportunity to take your mind map and make it a PDF file that you can share it to others. And so that's the only factor that basically would cost any money whatsoever. Sharing maps, you know, we just talked about that. For those who want to share a map with others, XMime provides a small fee that enables you to share maps with others. And then finally, samples. XMime provides a wide range of creative maps. And so the next this is a sample mind map that is basically fully fleshed out. They're talking about mind mapping. And so they're talking about presentations up in the far right-hand corner, then note-taking and studying and problem-solving, planning, brainstorming. These are just examples. But then you can just pop and drag, just click and drag. If you want to say, okay, I've got something up here that I want to take over here, then you just pull it over. It's exceptionally well done, and it's very, very easy to do. And whether I was doing anything, a small thing or a big thing, the realities are, I always start with XMind and trying to really help. And then I move stuff around and for those of you that are pastors and are, you know, speaking, you can kind of say, well, I want to move this particular over here and make sure that everything is done. But it provides me the capabilities of being able, or that person to have the capabilities of being really able to really functional, to use it as a functional tool. So this was a short 1 hour, and I apologize for that. But I really do think that strategic planning, you know, is something that we need to be involved in. And I hope that I've given you some sorts of activities or things that basically allow you the opportunity to be really engaged in really meaningful ways.